Well, here we are, another Sunday. I think I said last week, I can't believe that 7 days went by, and here we are again. 7 days went by, and
it went and happened again.
It did. It did. It goes by so quickly.
I think that happens as you get older, though. I feel like time.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 7 days goes by, and I was like, yeah, that happens every week.
that happens no matter how old you are.
did she just call me old?
No.
Uh-huh. Well, she said as you get older.
Older.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Eight is older than seven, so don't worry about it.
That's true. Oh, my. All right. So today, we've got a very interesting show. It's going to be a good show. It's a topic that we've talked about and touched on a bunch of times here on the show. And it's food sensitivities. I know we bring it up over and over and over again, but that's how important it is. I know that food sensitivities have directly affected my life. They've directly affected Aaron's life. And yeah, it's kind of scary to find out what foods you're maybe sensitive to. But at the same time, it is wonderful once you remove those things out of your diet and you see the positive changes that can take place.
Yeah, and I think that it affects so many things, and it affects so many people that don't know that this could possibly even be an issue and leads to so many other problems, which is why we thought, okay, you know, we get enough questions about it that we thought, all right, let's address this and really go through it and make sure that we've touched on the things that are really important.
You're right. That's exactly right. And the thing about food sensitivities is, you know, we have a lot of people that have autoimmune condition. And food sensitivities can lead to autoimmune condition, and autoimmune condition can lead to food sensitivities.
Yeah, it's kind of a vicious circle.
It's a vicious circle.
Wow. Great minds think alike.
Yep. Yep. Even old ones.
Exactly.
Even old ones. All right. So as we navigate through this show today, we're going to talk about a different things. We're going to differentiate between food allergies and food sensitivities. We're going to talk about gluten sensitivities, why gluten sensitivities, excuse me, I don't know what that was, why gluten sensitivities have become this hot topic that we've, you know, more and more people are hearing about. We're seeing more and more gluten-free foods pop up in our grocery stores. We're going to differentiate gluten sensitivity from celiac disease.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
We've touched on that before, and this was something when preparing for the show that Dr. TJ had explained to me. I hadn't realized because I had said, well, we talked about gluten sensitivity, I don't know, a few weeks ago, and I didn't realize what a big deal gluten sensitivity is in terms of leading to other food sensitivities. I knew that you could be sensitive to basically any food, but having a gluten sensitivity is more of a problem than even other food sensitivities. It's more likely to lead to a greater number of food sensitivities and to autoimmune conditions, which we'll get into.
Right, right. Basically, gluten, it unlocks the gate and just lets things go crazy. So, yeah, that's exactly right. So, we're also going to talk about how neurotransmitters like serotonin, how they're made in our gut, and if we have a leaky gut or if we have food sensitivities, that we can affect levels of those. And if we have time at the end, we may even talk, Aaron and I may even talk about our own personal travels with food sensitivities and the things that we noticed and even more importantly, what other people noticed about us once we addressed those food sensitivities. So we get to talk about our own personal things, and I think that a lot of people enjoy seeing that. I mean, I'm not afraid to show information about myself to my clients. I pull out my own lab work and I'm like, here you go. Look, this is me. So
yeah, this is how it changed.
Yes.
Once I was able to address what was actually making me sick.
Yes. So let's start by talking about food sensitivities versus food allergies. I oftentimes give this analogy. The foods we eat do one of two things. They either build us up or break us down. And just because a food is considered a health food does not mean that that food is healthy for us. There's no way of knowing if a food is good and healthy for us without testing. I've said that a million times. I say it to every person that comes into the clinic once we talk about food sensitivities.
Yeah, and it's funny because, and I've probably said this on here before, I think it's still shocking to people when they find out that foods that they considered healthy are causing such a big problem. Because even though, you know, Dr. Gide said that he makes that statement all the time and it seems like people understand it, then once they get their results back and they find out, you know, they should not be eating any broccoli or lettuce or kale.
Or spinach. Or spinach. Just, it's mind-blowing.
And they're like, that makes absolutely no sense. Or, you know, people who say, blueberries, well, I'm not going to quit eating blueberries. That's ridiculous that you're telling me that's a bad food.
And again, I have to clarify to those people, it's not a bad food. It's just not good for you.
Right.
It's this truly personalized things. I wasn't the one that came back and said that. It was your immune system that reacted to the food, not me.
Right.
Right? It's all about getting the things that you need to build you up.
Right. So let's start out discussing, if you can explain how, because we're really focusing on food sensitivities, and I know a lot of people use that interchangeably with food allergies. They're actually two different things. So, Dr. TJ, can you explain what the difference is?
Yeah. So, a food allergy is an allergic type of reaction. So, this is an anaphylactic thing. So, a food allergy, the easiest thing to do is just give an example. And that's like when someone has a peanut allergy. We all know someone who has had a peanut allergy. We all know someone, or if we don't know someone, we've heard of it at least before, where if a person eats a peanut, their throat swells, they can't breathe, they have to have a shot, or they have to go to the hospital. The same thing is true for shellfish. That's a common food allergy.
Right.
People know these things.
Right.
If you have...
Yeah, go ahead.
No, if you have that, yeah, exactly. You were going to say, if you have children that have this allergy, you already know that they have the allergy.
Right, and it's scary because... we always worry children aren't going to be as diligent about making sure that they aren't around, you know, peanuts or shellfish. And a lot of times they'll have to carry an EpiPen with them. I mean, it's a scary thing if you have it. But one of the things that we had talked about before is this is very different than food sensitivities because, first of all, it's generally an immediate reaction.
Right.
So you know that you have it. And also, unfortunately, food allergies are something that you're not going to get rid of, right?
Right. Yeah. We're not talking about food allergies today and helping those. I'm not going to fix somebody's peanut allergy.
Right.
I'm not going to fix your allergy to shellfish. Just like, you know, and another type of IgE allergy, an anaphylactic allergy, is like being allergic to pollen or pet dander. Those are lesser than an anaphylactic reaction, but it's still the specific type of reaction that's taking place. Yeah, we're not addressing that. That's not what we're after.
Right. Can I just kind of a side note here, though?
Yes, side note away. I like side notes.
Well, in my personal experience, I know that I have friends who were sure that they were allergic to pet dander or mold or something, and then they had a food sensitivity test done. It turns out that those symptoms that they thought were caused by something like pet dander were all actually caused by eating foods they were sensitive to. So if you know for sure, if you've been tested and you know that you have an allergy to one of those things, it's not going to go away. If you just have symptoms that you yourself have attributed to a cause, but you haven't actually been tested for it, you probably should still be tested for a food sensitivity because you may completely get rid of your runny nose and your coughing and sneezing, whatever it may be, because it's hard to know. I mean, we make those connections. They may not always be accurate.
Yeah, and that's very true. I made some connections that weren't 100% accurate. You know, I got tested when I was relatively young, early teenager, and found out that I was allergic to some grasses and some trees and mold. And I was so sensitized at that point that just a little bit of mold around and I couldn't breathe. My eyes were watering. I was sneezing. I was constantly taking some sort of antihistamine. It was just a big problem. And once I got older, several years ago, I did my food sensitivity test, started following that food sensitivity diet. Now I'm still allergic to mold, but it's nowhere close to what it used to be.
Right. It makes a big difference.
And, it does.
And I had not been tested, but I was told that I had seasonal allergies, which after years of taking allergy medicine, eventually you know, led to me taking allergy medicine year round. So, which was kind of funny because it's no longer seasonal. It's just you have allergies. Since learning what my food sensitivities are and eliminating those from my diet, I have not needed any sort of medication. All of those symptoms have gone away. So many people are diagnosed with seasonal allergies just based on symptomatology, and that may not be what it is at all. And it doesn't make a lot of sense, if you're not familiar with this, that something like sneezing or, you know, runny nose would be caused by a food. It's strange, but it could definitely happen.
Right. That's exactly right. So when we're talking about food sensitivities, when we're talking about these types of reactions, what we're talking about is how our immune system is responding. So we've got to take a little bit of time here, and we've got to talk about our immune system. Our immune system has different kinds of soldiers that go to battle for us. There are a bunch of different types. It's kind of like having, you know, specialists in the military. It's like having, you know, Navy SEALs and Army Rangers and Marine snipers. They're all special forces, but they're used for very different operations. And then we have things like, in our body, it would be the equivalent of like police officers or firefighters or paramedics. We have these types of things too. And we have these different types of reactions that we can have that go on. And these things are mediated by these proteins called immunoglobulins. And we have five different ones, and they are IgM, IgD, IgE, IgA, and IgG. And I say like IgM because it's just short for immunoglobulin M. And a couple of these are not really related to food sensitivities, and we're not really going to talk about those. So don't feel like we're leaving a couple of these off, and we're leaving off IgM and IgD.
Yeah. If you ever want to discuss, Dr. TJ would be thrilled to discuss immunoglobulin
M and D. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All day, but not today.
Right. So what we're going to talk about is IgE, which we kind of already did with the anaphylaxis, and then IgA and IgG. So we've got to take a quick break. On the backside of this break, we're going to come back in and we're going to talk about IgA and IgG reactions and what they can mean for health. You're listening to Wellness 101. Welcome back. Another happy Sunday. We're talking today here on Wellness 101 about food sensitivities, and we're kind of tying that into leaky gut and autoimmune condition and all kinds of different things. It's very interesting. If you missed the first segment of the show, we were talking about our own kind of personal, little bit of about of our own personal run-ins with food sensitivities and how they've changed our lives and what it's done. And we were also talking about anaphylactic reactions, actual food allergies rather than food sensitivities. So you might want to go back and catch that first segment if you missed it. So,
and you had mentioned that those are called IgE.
Oh, yes.
Reactions, and we're going to move on to IgA and IgG reactions, which are food sensitivities.
And we're leaving out IgM and IgD. But if you want to, we can talk about those some other time. Be very excited to. So IgA and IgG. So these reactions are important, and we really have to test for these. This isn't something that's immediate that you know, like a peanut. You eat a peanut and your head swells up, you know that you are allergic to that peanut. These types of sensitivities can be delayed, 3 or 4 days delayed, that we can have these reactions. This is what makes them so difficult to figure out and diagnose is, you know, we don't tie them to anything. We're so conditioned that if we eat a food and it doesn't cause our stomach to be upset, then it must be healthy for us. But that's not what we're talking about here. Okay, so these IgA reactions, let's talk about IgA first. IgA, immunoglobulin A, these are antibodies that protect our body's surfaces that are exposed to outside things. So we're talking about things like our mucous membranes is really what we're after. These are areas like our eyes, ears, nose, throat, digestive tract, and in women, the vaginal tract, saliva, and tears contain high levels of IgA. So you know, sometimes, you know, here's one. Go drink a bunch of milk. If it creates a bunch of mucus in the back of your throat, the likelihood is you shouldn't be consuming milk.
Right. And so many people have that, and it doesn't happen right away.
Right.
So they don't necessarily put the two together.
Exactly right.
What is the time frame? Is it 72 hours?
72 hours is you know, standard. It can be a little longer. Some docs out there are really pushing the fringe and saying it can be a little longer than that. I'm not really sure. 72, we know from testing and research that it's at least you can have at least 72 hours of delay. And this is hard because, you know, you could have a small sensitivity to one food that you eat today, and it's not enough to create a reaction that you may actually notice. Say the reaction is joint pain, because it can create any kind of reaction. Say the reaction is joint pain. You may eat one food today that doesn't really create the joint pain. It just starts the ball rolling. And then tomorrow you could eat another food that you have a very low sensitivity to that, when you add the two together, it actually creates the reaction. But on day three is when you have the reaction and you eat a food and you create it, you equate it to a food that you ate on day three, and it has nothing to do with that food. It was the foods that you ate on days one and two.
Right. And if you think about the number of different ingredients that are in packaged food, all of the different reactions you could possibly be having.
Oh, my gosh.
How it is impossible to be able to figure out what you're reacting to without actually testing it.
Right, because heaven forbid somebody actually eat food the way we're supposed to. Heaven forbid we eat meat and vegetables.
Right, but you could be allergic to meat and vegetables.
You could.
So even if you...
I was comparing processed foods. You know,
right.
Packaged food, you got 70 million ingredients in that thing. I mean, look at the side of the box.
Right.
And some of them you can't even pronounce.
Right, but even if you are eating very cleanly and simply, it is extremely difficult to know what is causing a problem without an actual test.
That's right. So. Yeah, there's no way to know. There's just, you just can't know. So those are IgAs. So IgAs are usually areas of mucous membranes, eyes, ears, nose, throat, digestive tract, saliva, tears, vaginal tract in women. IgGs, these are our most common immunoglobulin. IgGs make up about 75-80% or so of all of our antibodies. So, you know, 20 to 25% are the other four combined. So IgGs, what's unique about those and what's interesting about these is these reactions can literally create any single sign or symptom in the body, including the reactions that are associated with IgA. So you could eat I just said milk may be as a big mucus producer for a lot of people. Well, another food that's creating an IgG reaction for you could also be a mucus producer. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And the way that I think about IgA and IgG, then I guess it depends on what your actual reaction is. Personally, I have very few IgA allergies. I have a ton of IgG allergies, which, I mean, is not good or bad, but if you have an IgG allergy, you're more likely to have basically any symptom, right?
Right. It can be absolutely anything. Whereas when I did my sensitivities, I had a lot more IgA sensitivities.
Right.
And I knew that I had IgA sensitivities once I learned about this and really got into, like, what's going on, because most of my stuff was always digestive upset.
Right. And so you may not have known exactly what was causing the problem,
right,
but you knew there was a problem.
Right.
With me, I had things like headaches, pain, fatigue, brain fog, which... I went to doctors for years, and they would say, there is nothing wrong with you. So many tests I had.
Did they throw an antidepressant at you?
Eventually they decide that you're crazy.
That's
and
right.
You kind of start thinking that you are.
Oh, you're convinced that you are.
I'm not a dramatic person, and so I'm thinking I wouldn't be complaining if I wasn't, you know, functioning at least, and you do start kind of feeling like you're a hypochondriac, and maybe you are crazy, because nobody can find anything wrong. And I mean, after, you know, colonoscopy, upper endoscopy, all of these tests and nothing coming back that was wrong, where do you go? And I think so many people find themselves in that situation and they don't know what to do. And then eventually they find someone like Dr. TJ, or they end up with a worse condition.
Yeah, and then they finally end up getting treated for a worse condition,
right.
And they never really fix the problem anyway, and they're
exactly.
just like, what in the world do I do?
Yeah, eventually they end up with heart disease or an autoimmune condition, or right. they're gaining weight like crazy. Or, I mean, the amount of problems that can be traced back to food sensitivities is just kind of crazy.
It's astronomical.
But if you think this is, you know, something that can completely affect your immune system and its ability to protect you, it makes sense that it could end up leading to various different conditions.
Right. And so to build on that just a little bit, I've had several people that, you know, some people, they're oftentimes one end of the spectrum. They've either had similar types of testing or they haven't. They've been lots of places and they've looked up stuff and their doctors have ran things on them. And most of the time, modern medicine, they're looking for stuff that will kill you quick. And so they're looking for tumors and, you know, lesions and, you know, all those different things. And when they don't find it, they don't know what to do. Well, then we have these other clients that come to us. And when we start talking about food sensitivities, they will proudly pull out and say, I've already had food sensitivities and it hasn't helped. That wasn't the answer. I'm like, okay. My very first question that I ask is, what type of test did you have done? 9 times out of 10, the answer is, well, I don't know. Well, that's important. Oftentimes, there are lots of people that get food sensitivity testing done out there. And some of you may have had food sensitivity testing and you're this person. You're sitting there saying, well, I did it and it didn't work for me. Well, did you get IgA sensitivity ran? There are very few companies out there that actually run IgA sensitivities.
And aren't there 4 different kinds of IgG? I think there are like 4 different kinds of IgG sensitivities. So they could just be testing for one of the 4. I want to take a step back before we
sure.
get into those food sensitivity tests. Because I know when we were preparing for this, you mentioned that a lot of people come in and say, my doctor already tested me, and they haven't actually been tested for food sensitivities. They've only been tested for allergies.
Yes, and that's another question that I ask. I'm glad you brought that up. That's another question I ask. I ask, how did they do the test? And oftentimes they will say, well, they got out those little things, and they did all the little skin pricks off my arm or on my back. That's the wrong test. That's an IgE test. That's what we talked about at the beginning. That's an anaphylactic reaction. That's a different type of test.
It's not a bad test.
Correct.
I mean, it kind of goes back to what you were saying that, you know, most medical doctors are looking for things that are going to kill you quickly.
Right.
I mean, and so it's not that those aren't important tests. They are important tests. If you have an IgE allergy, it is important that you figure that out and you avoid what you are allergic to. But that's not the end of the story.
Right. It's like taking your car in for a flat tire and all they did was check your exhaust system. Well, that's important to make sure that your exhaust system's working, but it never really addressed the issue. You got to know, you got to get the right testing done. And so many people have no idea. Their doctor just says, here, we're going to do this test. They don't tell them what it is. They don't explain to them why it's important. They don't say how it's related directly to them and their personal health. They just say, oh, here are the results. And then to top it all off, they get a call a week or two later from not the doctor, but somebody that works in the clinic says, oh, your test results came back and everything was normal. Well, what the world?
Right. Well, and I mean, that it's a good thing to know that you don't have IgE allergies, but I think the point we really want to get across is that that's a separate issue. And so I think so many people think that's the end of the story. My doctor has tested me and I was fine. And that is, it's only testing you for 1 out of 5 possible reactions. And so there is a lot more that you need to figure out, definitely if you have any sort of chronic health issues.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're going to talk. We got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the different types of tests that are out there, and you know where I think people get tripped up, and where they could do better. And then we're going to get into where are we going after that gluten sensitivity. Yeah, gluten sensitivities and leaky gut. You're listening to Wellness 101. That song might have been very. Appropriate if we'd have taken out Broken Hearted and put Broken Gut, because that's kind of what we're talking about today.
You could have just sang that part.
I'm no singer.
My point is, it's your life. Take control of it.
Oh. And Liz has tied it all together.
There we go. That's what I'm here for.
Liz's
tying
presence
the
is
music yep. into the show.
Oh, boy. Lord only knows what we're going to get next week. I'm going to be scared now. Now I'm going to be looking for hidden meanings of the music bringing us back into and out of the show. Oh, gosh. All right. So before the break, we were talking about food sensitivity testing and how people sometimes think they've had testing done and they had the wrong test. And other times where we were getting to is they may have had food sensitivity tests run, actual IgG testing ran, but maybe they only had 50 foods or maybe 100 foods at tops and they just had IgG. Well, we missed half of it by not getting the other delayed reaction, the IgAs, and there are tests out there that are much larger than that. And my opinion is, if you're going to do the test, get as much information as you can.
Right.
Don't get 25% of the information when 100% is actually available.
Right. Well, and I know that initially you had started, you know, offering two tests, and then there were just so many people who came back and, you know, they weren't getting better as quickly as you wanted. You did the second test, and there were so many foods that they were allergic to that it just got to a point where there's no sense. And I mean, you're basically throwing away the money on the first test if you're not going to get all the foods tested.
Right.
And from personal experience, I can speak to this because initially I had a test done by a different doctor and it was a limited test and I did see some benefit, but I was still really sick. And it wasn't until I got the extensive test that literally changed my life completely. So it is important to make sure that you're getting all of the different kind of reactions tested for, and also that it's a large number of foods.
Right. You want to know as much information as you can. It's always better to know. I look at my patients every day and I'm like, look, it's better to know.
Right.
It's better to know. It's always better to know. Even if the news is bad news, it's better to know.
Well, and something that you had brought up and I have heard recently, I did not even know that this was a thing, that some people are offering food sensitivities with food with a finger prick.
Yeah, they are. It works. And like you said, it works. It's a limited test. You can only get so much information out of a finger prick or a heel stick. And, you know, maybe that's fine for if you're testing a baby or something like that. I actually will do that if it's a baby, but that can't be the only test. That can't be how we test adults.
Well, babies aren't eating a ton of different foods.
Right. They're pretty much on a limited diet. And, you know, I mean, I think the youngest person I've had to draw blood on is 18 months. I think it's 18 months. And so it's a little traumatic for a young one to have that. But let me tell you, when mama comes back and talks about all of the ridiculous levels of health improvements that have gone on since figuring out what it was that they were eating that they shouldn't have been eating. And I mean, you can't ask for a better thing to do for your kid.
Right. Well, and first of all, I mean, you make a good point. I mean, it may seem traumatic for the child, probably more traumatic for the mother, I think, anytime that you're watching.
Right.
You know, but what a caring thing to do, because at 18 months, generally, they've started on, you know,
solid foods.
They're eating solid foods.
Yep.
And that's when you start to see a reaction and it can make a tremendous difference. And because most of our listeners are over 18 months, you probably want a bigger test.
Right. And if you are 18 months and you're listening, good for you.
Wow.
You've got great parents. Where were we going after that?
You wanted to talk about why gluten specifically is a bigger deal if you are allergic to or sensitive to gluten.
Yeah. So that, okay. So gluten is important because gluten causes the cells in your gut to release this stuff called zonulin. It's a big fancy word, but it's an actual thing that's in your body. And when your body releases this zonulin, what it does is it unlocks the cells of your gut, basically makes your gut leaky for a half hour or so after you eat gluten. Gluten is the one that unlocks this stuff. This is why gluten is really not that good for humans. Well, whether you have a sensitivity to gluten or not, it causes this to be released. And here's the big kicker. So I spend my time, a little bit of my time, I would like to say once a month, but it's way more frequent than that. I go on the clinicaltrials.gov website and I look and see where are the research heads and the research minds, what are they thinking? What are they looking for? There are actually, in clinical trials right now, anti-zonulin medication. They're understanding that this stuff is not good for us. And once that medication comes out, trust me, ladies and gentlemen, you will hear more about leaky gut than you've ever heard in your entire life. You think you hear about it now? Just wait until every commercial break is flooded with an anti-zonulin medication. And that's great. The anti-zonulin is going to be great, but it's not going to fix the problem. Fixing the problem means getting rid of the gluten.
Right. Which, well, it's so funny.
I got a little revved up there.
Yeah.
They're laughing at me in the studio. I might have turned a little red there.
Well, it's funny to me that you don't hear anything about a condition until there is a medication to treat it. And I want to point out that leaky gut just a few years ago was seen as complete quackery. I mean,
right.
Doctors did not believe it was an actual thing. It was something that alternative medicine practitioners had made up to try to, you know, trick people into treatment.
But time out. But there are over 10,000 research articles out there. You can go look. There are over 10,000 research articles out there that deal with intestinal permeability. That is leaky gut. Permeability means leaky.
Right.
So a couple of years ago, when this was being laughed at, even 5 years ago, the research was there. You can't pump out 10,000 research articles in a year or two. Doesn't happen.
And that is, well, I mean, I will say that that's one of the benefits of being treated by Dr. TJ, because he is one of the few humans, I'm guessing, who likes to read all of these things.
But, nerd alert.
But I mean, it's like that with a number of conditions, right? I mean, We have the same issues with thyroid problems. Doctors are looking at two things when all of the research says that you need to look at all the different parts of a thyroid. So it's not just a leaky gut is not the first time that this has happened.
Right.
It happens a lot in medicine where nobody believes it. It's laughed at. And then they start realizing, oh, wait, this could be a problem. And then once there's a medication, well, then.
Then it's been there all along and just generally accepted.
Everybody has it probably. Yep. And so. But as Dr. TJ had said, the answer is not to start taking a medication to fix it.
Right.
It's the same thing with diabetes. It's so frustrating because, no, you don't need to quit eating sugar. Just take a medication to...
Sugar got you in the mess. If you are diabetic, stop eating sugar.
Right. I mean, it's not... But that isn't even hardly discussed. I mean, they might mention it, but then they're like, well, take this medicine and you're fine. And that makes... doesn't make any sense, and I get that we're kind of, it's my job to keep us on track, and I've kind of
off
gone off the rails with you.
Off the rails.
But so, okay.
So let's talk about celiac disease and how it's different than a gluten sensitivity.
Can I say one thing first?
For just a second, yes. Here we go, back off the rails again.
No, before we jump to that, you had said that gluten is more of a problem because of, it increases zonulin?
It causes your body to release it, releases zonulin.
But gluten is not, even if you don't have a gluten sensitivity, being sensitive to other foods can still cause the problem, right?
Correct.
Gluten is quicker at
doing it.
Gluten's
quick, that's right.
Okay, so back to where you were.
Okay, so back to where I was. So celiac disease is an autoimmune disease where your immune system is attacking your small intestine. And the only way to really truly diagnose celiac disease is to do a biopsy. But they also run this test called a tissue transglutaminase IgA. There's that mysterious IgA. It's a mucous membrane. Of course it is. And that may be positive, but it's not 100% foolproof. And so really the only way to diagnose celiac is to get bad enough that they actually want to do a tissue biopsy. Well, the symptoms of celiac disease and gluten sensitivity are almost identical. So there's no need to wait until you have a test that comes back that's positive for celiac disease to know that you have a problem with gluten. We can open our eyes and step out of the realm and say, hey, you know what? I've got some digestive issues. Maybe I should just stop eating gluten for about 9 months or so. And I say 9 months. It's more than 30 days. It's more, you know, you may see immediate results, but our immune system lives way longer than 30 days, and our immune system has memory. Just like you've had chickenpox as a kid, you don't get chickenpox as an adult because your immune system has memory. Your immune system with foods has memory as well. And they run other tests, too, that are mostly dealing with IgA. And I could rattle those off. I know those, but it's not that important here. But another thing that's important is this gliadin. And we've got to take a quick break, but I want to touch on this right before we go. Gliadin is this stuff called it's a prolamin, okay? And if you have celiac disease and you're listening, stop eating all grains. All grains contain these things called prolamins, and we only test for the one. There's prolamins in barley. There's prolamins in rye. There's prolamins in sorghum and corn. The prolamin in corn is called zine. I just like saying that word, zine. It makes me sound like I know how to speak German or something. Zine. So, all right, with that, we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, what are we going to talk about when we come back? Where do you want to go?
Leaky gut.
Oh, leaky gut. Well, I guess we got to touch on leaky gut. All right, we'll be back after this. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We've been talking about food sensitivities today. And we're in our last segment. It flew by again, just like the 7 days. The hour goes even faster. Wow. So we were talking about leaky gut and talking about gluten, and we're talking about leaky gut, how that leads to food sensitivities, and then how food sensitivities can also lead to leaky gut and just a kind of a big vicious circle. And we were talking about how if we eat gluten just accelerates the speed at which we would develop or may develop gluten or leaky gut, because gluten causes our body to release this stuff called zonulin. And zonulin kind of unlocks the cells and makes them much more permeable to food proteins and products. And so we end up with leaky gut.
Right. I think of it like the difference between a flour sifter and like a colander for pasta. I mean, does that make sense?
That's pretty good.
In my brain, I usually have like these pictures in my brain of how I think of it. And it's, you know, you want it really.
When she's spending all that time in the kitchen, she was talking about.
Right.
For those of you who don't know, Erin does not cook.
I cook some.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I have a limited amount of, a lot of hamburger soup.
Yes.
But frozen pizzas totally count. That's
I can
what
do
I cook.
Things. There are some things I can cook. It's just, you know, we just eat the same things over and over, which I will note leads to food sensitivities.
That
and
does.
It's not a good thing to
That's
do.
That's exactly right. It is not a good thing to do. You've learned
yes.
since having your food sensitivities that you can't eat the yeah. same things over and over again.
And yet.
and yet that's all she can cook, ladies and
right,
gentlemen.
Exactly.
So it's a conundrum.
Yeah. So leaky gut is when you've got kind of holes that are allowing, I mean, the particles out that are not supposed to be in their bloodstream, right?
Right, right. And we're not talking about, like, food particles. We're not going to draw your blood and find, you know, chunks of broccoli and some steak in there. We're still talking about molecules, little bitty things. And where your body would normally break a protein down into maybe two or three amino acids that go through your gut and don't irritate your immune system and you absorb it and that's the way it's supposed to be, you may have 20, 30, 40, 100 protein molecule or amino acids all hooked together that get through. Still very, very tiny, but your immune system says, hey, wait, that shouldn't be here. That's foreign. And so it flags it. And then that just triggers our immune system to create all kinds of havoc. Now we're inflamed and we're starting to create this whole vicious cycle of food sensitivities.
Right. Well, and something that you had mentioned we were preparing is that really, that means our immune system is working correctly, right?
Yes. Oftentimes, it's our immune system is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing. It's just, it's doing it when it shouldn't be.
Right. Well, the particles shouldn't be there.
Correct.
So, I mean, the actual function, what the immune system is doing isn't wrong. That's what your immune system is supposed to do. It's supposed to attack things that are where they aren't supposed to be.
Correct.
But why not fix the problem that is allowing those particles
right.
to be where they aren't supposed to be.
And this is how it leads to autoimmune disease, because what happens is our body sees this big protein that comes through and it looks eerily similar to maybe thyroid tissue, or it looks eerily similar to gut tissue, or eerily similar to joints. And our body flags it all, and if enough of it gets there, our body's like, well, I mean, this stuff's everywhere. I see that protein over here. Let's go attack that. And it's attacking your thyroid, and it shouldn't be.
Right. And then attacking new foods.
Yes.
And so, you know, yeah, food sensitivities lead to autoimmune, which lead to more food sensitivity. So it, like we had said at the beginning, it's a vicious cycle.
Right.
And one of the things that I want to make sure that we get in here, we talked about when we are preparing for the show, all of the different conditions that are linked to leaky gut.
Yeah, we were talking about signs that you may have a leaky gut. There are just tons of them. If you have any kind of digestive issue, gas, bloating, diarrhea, constipation, you might have leaky gut. I mean, we could do a whole Jeff Foxworthy stand-up here. You might have a leaky gut if, right? So some of you out there may find that humorous. I don't know. If not, well, sorry. Seasonal allergies, asthma, you might have a leaky gut. Hormone imbalances, people who have, women who have PCOS or PMS, they may have a hormone imbalance, or may have a leaky gut, rather. If you have chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia, if you've got skin problems, if you've got acne or rosacea or eczema, might be a leaky gut. If you have candida overgrowth, if you have an autoimmune disease, if you have an autoimmune disease, you pretty much can guarantee you're going to have a leaky gut.
Right. Which I just want to point out, and I don't know, are you done with that list?
Yeah, I could probably go on and on, but we'll stop there.
That the reason why we're pointing out, if you have these things, you could have a leaky gut. One of the best ways to start healing a leaky gut is to eliminate the foods that you're sensitive to, which is why I do want to make sure we tie this all in.
Yes.
Why we're talking about leaky gut in a food sensitivity show.
Stop. You have to eliminate. Even if someone comes into our clinic and they're like, you know what, because we try to work with everyone. They're like, I don't really want to do anything other than just the food sensitivity. Okay, well, how can I do that if I only am dealing with food? Well, what I would tell you is definitely eliminate all the foods to which you are sensitive. You have to stop pouring gas on the fire. You have to.
Right.
You can't just say, oh, well, I'm going to have, you know, this that I'm sensitive to. I'm sensitive to broccoli. I'm only going to eat it on the weekend. Doesn't work like that. Your immune system doesn't know the difference. You'll actually create bigger problems by continuing to eat those foods that you're sensitive to.
Right. And I don't want to cut you off, but I know we are super excited about our show coming up next week.
Yes.
And you wanted to have a second to talk about it. So
yes,
before we get going,
yeah. I want to thank everyone for listening. If you want more information about us and the show, visit our website, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. Call us 314-293-8123. Follow us on all our social media outlets. We put stuff up there almost daily. So next week, tune in. We have a very special guest that's going to be on the show. We are going to have Dr. David Harshfield. He is a visiting doctor with the Institute of Natural Health. He is a very close personal friend of mine. One of, if not the smartest individual I know. I mean, this guy is just flat out brilliant. I've known him for years. We've had the privilege of working on some cases together. It's been a lot of fun. During this show, we are going to be diving into his work. This guy is a pioneer in cellular regenerative medicine. So what this means, this is stem cell stuff. This is next generation medicine. This guy, he is wonderful. Dr. Harshfield is on the board for the American Academy of Orthopedic Medicine. These guys are the ones that are leading the way and leading the charge in regenerative cellular medicine. Not only is he on the board, he's one of the main instructors. He teaches all of these other doctors how to do this stuff. He lectures all over the world. We're going to be talking about things like platelet-rich plasma injections. We're going to be, you know, these are things that can help musculoskeletal injuries, pain. You can regenerate stuff. I actually had PRP injected into a ligament in my wrist that I tore several years ago, regrew it in like 3 weeks. It's amazing. We're going to get to talk about that. If you suffer from any kind of pain, we highly encourage you to tune in and don't miss this show.
And even more importantly, I don't mean to cut you off, but he's coming into, he does periodically come into the clinic, and
yes,
he's going to be here.
Friday, March 24th.
Yes. And last time, just to give you guys a heads up, because if you wait till next week, he filled up in 4 hours.
Yeah, we filled him all day Friday and half the day on Saturday in 4 hours. And
so,
we just put the word out there, and it was just like, whoosh, flies to a...
Well, he's well-known and
moths to a light.
Highly respected.
Yes.
And we're very excited to have him.
He's great. So be sure to tune in. You are not going to want to miss it. I guess that's it. So thanks for listening. Until next week, this has been Wellness 101. Yeah.